Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for listening. Big, big show, so I'm going to be very brief here at the top. We've got two guests. First up, from the WWE, Roman Reigns. Following him, Chris Mad Dog Russo from SiriusXM. So two regulars here who I always enjoy interviewing, and both were great during our chats this week. So good show. And then, of course, Train of Thoughts follows that with Sal Licata. Before we get to it, very quickly, if you missed last week's show with Ian Eagle, it was great. Got up a little late on Apple Podcasts, so you may have missed it. So check that out, Ian, with some great stories and imitations and everything there. And then 2 weeks ago, Brian Curtis from The Ringer to talk about sports media news. So check those two out if you missed them. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast, and if you can rate and review, that helps as well. All right, let's get to this week's show. Roman Reigns from the WWE, and then Chris Russo from SiriusXM, and then Train of Thoughts right now. All right, joining me now, I think I could call him an SI Media Podcast regular. He's been on a bunch of times. Always fun talking to the WWE Universal Champion, Roman Reigns. Roman, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Jimmy. How are you, man?
I'm well. Good to see you again. I'm just curious because I, you know, when we do this, I call you Roman, but everyone knows your name is Joe. How do you pronounce your last name? Because I always get, I don't want to ever say it wrong in case I ever use your last name.
Anoa'i.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, everyone knows you as Roman Reigns, so it's easy to stick with that. Roman, of course, will be main eventing SummerSlam Saturday, August 21st. I like the WWE going to the Saturday day over Sunday for this. SummerSlam Saturday, August 21st against John Cena on WWE Network on Peacock. So we'll get into all that. But before we get into all that, I wanted to start with some light things, and then we'll get into that because you're good with opinion. You know, I don't know if you've seen this, and I only saw it because The Rock got involved in this, but there's been this trend on, I don't know if it's, I don't want to just say Twitter, it might be the entire internet, where like celebrities are saying that they don't shower regularly or often. And let me get the tweet here because The Rock weighed in. Yeah. Yeah, you seem surprised.
Gross, yeah.
Exactly. You have the proper reaction to this. And I had the tweet ready to go, and then I lost it. But let me read you what Dwayne The Rock Johnson wrote about this trend, because he weighed in on it and said he showers 3 times a day.
Yeah.
He does a cold shower in the morning, warm after his workout, and then hot. Here's what he wrote. I'm the opposite of a not washing themselves celebrity. Shower cold when I roll out of bed to get my day rolling. Shower warm after my workout before work. Shower hot after I get home from work. Face wash, body wash, exfoliate, and I sing off key in the shower. So we need to know, what is Roman Reigns' stance on showering? Are you on The Rock side here, or are you one of these celebrities who are not showering that often?
Oh, I'm definitely with Dwayne right now. I'm kind of thrown off that this is a thing that they don't shower. You know what I mean? Like celebrities saying they don't shower. That's
I think it was Jake Gyllenhaal came out and said like the older he, like once he hit 40 and the older he gets, he finds less of a need to bathe, was his quote.
Oh, that's not good. I don't know if there's some kind of evolution his skin's going through, but no, I mean, I'm a 2 to 3 shower a day guy. It depends on the day, right? And it depends on my workout. So, you know, definitely after a workout, or if we have a show, so I'll work out before the show. So definitely after the workout, and then most likely before the show, just to kind of, you know, rinse off, get, you know, feeling good, smelling good, go out there and deliver. And then obviously after you perform, you got to shower again, right? Or if I'm at home, for sure, at least 2 times after, you know, I have a morning workout cardio session. And then I have, you know, like a big block of the day where I'm just doing dad stuff, taking care of the kids, helping out, doing, you know, some upkeep at the house or chores, what have you. And then we'll train again. And then sometimes I would shower after that, or like a quick, nice little rinse, you know what I mean? Just to get out of those sweaty clothes, I would say, and then get another cardio session at night, which you want to shower. But as far as the temperatures, that he's very specific with the temperatures that he has for routine. For me, I like a good medium, like a warm shower. But he didn't mention, I don't know if he does this or anybody else does this, but the best way to shower is to do a steam shower and then roll right into a cold shower after. Like you want to like kind of like
build up to it.
Yeah, well, even like start the shower while you're still steaming because your pores are open. So when you're soaping up and washing up, it gets in. It's a deep cleaning, right? So I always throw that steam shower in there, you know, depending on what happened throughout the day or even the night before. If I may have had a few drinks the night, you know, before, we'll do it in the morning to get that sweat out, to get going and have a good day. But yeah, I don't know about this no shower and stuff. Mr. Gyllenhaal, come on now. We appreciate your work. You're very good at what you do, but we need you to be clean and shower up, buddy.
Glad to hear you're on the right side of this.
What about you? What are you, two?
Once a day. I'm not like you working out 10 times a day. So I can't start my day until I shower. So like I gotta like as soon as I'm out of bed, I'm in the shower within like 5 minutes of waking up. I got to do that, and then if in the summer I grill a lot and then I got to take a shower. If it's like one of those like 90 degree days and you're grilling burgers and stuff, I got to take a shower after that because that's gross. But, you know, once a day is usually good for me. We got to talk about SummerSlam and your match with John Cena. When I ask you to, we're not going to get into like the John Cena bashing yet. We'll do that when we promote. I got to do like something nice. Did you see on Twitter?
I've been doing a lot of that this morning.
But this is much, much lighter. Have you seen on Twitter or Instagram, because John ended up, the black John Cena?
No.
You have not. You must not follow John Cena on Instagram.
No, I don't. And I don't do too. I have five kids, so I don't do too much of the social media scrolling.
I don't know how it came about, but someone went viral on social media because he looked exactly like John Cena, but he was black. And literally the words black John Cena were trending on Twitter because this picture went viral. So I just wanted to know if you saw it, but you did not.
It's weird because I know they did that years ago with Darren Young, I believe, from the Nexus. And he was the tag team with Titus O'Neil. Fred Rozier, I think, is his real name. But I know there's a lot of comparisons between those two, and it was very, very close. Comparisons.
Let's get into the SummerSlam match a little bit. You and John coming back, got a great reaction from the crowd. Well, let's start with this because this happened to you as well. I mean, unfortunately, when you took a break, it was for medical reasons. But tell me if I'm wrong, as just an observer of the WWE, it does seem like the best thing a lot of the people can do, especially the top stars like yourself and John, can do sometimes is take a break and leave and get off camera. Do you think there's something to that? I mean, it's tough because like as a universal champion, like you need to be there every day and do shows and, you know, people come to see you. But it does seem like taking a break always ends up being a benefit for a lot of the WWE superstars. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think separation can enhance the affection, right? Like it's like even relationships. I think it's like a humanly psychological thing. You know, if when you're away from your significant other, you know, you miss them, and when you see them, usually it's a good thing. There's a lot of passion and love and admiration and affirmation that goes on once you reconnect. So and you couple that with a great success. In different genres of entertainment, you know, with his movies and Suicide Squad and Peacemaker and you know, all the other projects that he's got going on. And I think that's a recipe for success.
So when it comes about that you're going to main event SummerSlam with Cena, are you happy because you know he's coming back and there's buzz, or is it you'd rather a new guy get that chance, or maybe, you know, you've had your things with Cena already? Like how do you feel about it going into it?
I think it's a great position to be in. You know, like I said, he's which I just watched, the Suicide Squad. I thought it was really good. Way, no offense to the first one, but way better than that first one. They did a really good job of, putting a new spin on the, you know, sometimes when you see these characters like, Dwayne or, or Dave or even John, you can't help but to think of the WWE superstar, John Cena or Dave Bautista or The Rock. But I thought they did a really good job of casting him into a position and a role to where it was refreshing to see him. It's obviously he's coming with, some really great success, but I think it was it's a really good position to be in, especially for someone for myself, like myself, who's been doing, in my opinion, some of the best work of my career. And you couple that with a perfect storm, like a big movie star coming back, thinking things are going to be the same, thinking he's still got that step left. And when the reality is we're gonna really expose that and put it on blast in Vegas, and what better way to do it than in the main event of SummerSlam? What better way to do it than in front of 50, 60, 70,000 plus fans in Allegiant Stadium? So it's gonna be a great outing for myself.
So I have to ask, I basically can ask you a million questions about just the phenomenal missionary line that you threw out there on SmackDown.
Sure.
He came out here, the same music, the same entrance, the same run to the ring, the same outfit, the same promo, the same insults. If I wanted that, all I had to do was search online for 2005 John Cena. It's the same thing. Over and over and over. It's like missionary position every single night.
Because I tweeted that, and then John, I guess, came back and I said, I love that they're building a feud here just basically around the missionary position, which I thought was hysterical. But so first things first, did you write the line? Did someone else write the line? Did you because here's the thing. Okay. It's a great line, and you could deliver it. The way you delivered it was tremendous, with your head basically on a swivel. Take me through the process of delivering that, and then how much trouble you got in, because I know they edited it out. So I hope you didn't get reprimanded too much.
There was a portion of my career where I would. I'd either read a script or I would try to adjust a script as much as possible. But I, for a while now, especially since I come back from my little leave during the beginning of the pandemic, since SummerSlam, I'm not scripted. I say what I want to, I say what I feel. And if it comes out of my mouth, it's my verbiage. I come up with it, I deliver it. And that's why it's been the way it's been, because it's mine. What was the other
line? Well, congratulations, because it's a great line, and the way you delivered it was great. Right. What happened when you got backstage? Because I know they edited it out.
I don't know why they edited that out, and I think it did raise some eyebrows. But I don't get in trouble. You know what I mean? The gimmick is as close to being real as possible. You know what I mean? So even if they try to say something to me, I wouldn't have cared anyways. Wait, what are you gonna do? Not have me on SmackDown next week? Yeah, like I did before SummerSlam during last summer. I'll go home. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter to me. Let's see how it goes without me.
I love people that can do what they want. So great.
It's great. It is. It's awesome.
I won't harp on it, but I'm just curious. Did you have that line ready to go when you walked out the curtain, or did you think of it as you were doing the promo? How long in advance did you come up with that gem?
Everything's a bit of a feel, you know what I mean? Obviously this is my job, so I have a game plan and I'm attached to the creative process. So we're always brainstorming. We're always coming up with new material. But like you said before, it's all on the delivery. You can have the coolest lines of all time, but if you're not connected to it, you're not within the skin of what you're trying to do, it's not going to come off right. So you have to really put yourself in that position and try to deliver it accordingly. So yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't something that was holstered, throughout the week or the month or anything like that. A lot of my stuff is, because I have to be in that process. I have to be on location and in the mode. Because there are huge differences between who I am, you know, in real life, between Joe and Roman, right? You know, I'm a father and a husband. You know, that's the priority. But when it's time to go to SmackDown or time to go to a WWE event, I have to put on that whole head of the table, you know, mindset, that whole tribal chief, you know, skin, and try to display that as authentically as possible.
Do you ever have trouble keeping track of all the nicknames? There's a lot of nicknames for you. A lot of nicknames and a lot of, you know, yeah. Acknowledge me, the head of the table, the tribal. There's a lot going on with Roman Reigns right now.
We've created a whole bunch of stuff, right? it's been a lot, but no, I mean, you know, that's why I have a great team around me, and we hopefully can continue to develop these compelling storylines and narratives and catchphrases. And, you know, it's obviously within WWE sports entertainment, the wrestling business, that's a huge part of connecting to the crowd, is creating these mantras and mottos that people can connect to and remember and tag along.
It's interesting too, because sometimes it's really just the simplest things. I mean, you have a two-word phrase, acknowledge me, like that's it. And, you know, it's there. Everyone knows it. It's stuck. It's effective. You know, it says something about less is more sometimes.
Yeah. And it really goes back to that delivery and those minor details. I think, you know, and they say the devil's in the details, and that's what's so important. Is I'm not trying to confuse anybody. I'm not trying to trick them with my performance. I want them to be able to like chew on it and digest it and understand and go on that ride with me and feel these emotions that I'm trying to convey and I'm trying to trigger. And yeah, man, less is best in my opinion, but you have to be able to display these things and deliver them on point. Otherwise it's, you know, it doesn't connect and translate the same. So I think the small details and those nuances that I try to continually progress at and perfect are a lot of the reason why I'm in the position that I am.
Is this the best time, your most favorite time of your career?
Oh, without question, yeah. I'm enjoying myself. I really am.
You deserve it. You know, it was a lot of crap that you went through, so it's good to see you. What's going on now. And, of course, you're helped by the great Paul Heyman. I will admit, when I heard the missionary line, there was a part of me that thought, I wonder if Heyman came up with that one, because it's usually him saying the outlandish stuff. I know there's one famous video on YouTube where he's cutting a you know, it's supposed to be a serious promo, and you put your head down and it looked like you were not fully able to contain the laughter. How often does that happen? Have you ever come close to really losing it? Because a couple of weeks ago, I know social media went nuts with when he was doing the John Cena, how often does it get difficult to keep it straight when Paul Heyman's doing his thing?
It can be tough at times. I think we're doing the, it was like the 10 bell salute to Daniel Bryan's career,
yes,
or something, yes, like that.
Yes.
I think that's, you know, huge kudos to Paul and his experience, his career, the path that he's, you know, carved out within this industry and also, you know, leading this industry for a portion of that time and taking it to, you know, different thresholds and extremes that, you know, have never been done before. They're constantly trying to be emulated, but it's just never going to be the same. Right. But I think that's just, goes to show that, you know, the experience and the level of performance that he provides, and that adds just a great weapon to my arsenal to be able to have, like, you know, like someone like Paul Heyman, which I don't think there's anyone like him. He's a one of one. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah.
To be able to have him in my corner to bounce ideas off of, to riff and brainstorm about it, the creative or whatever, whether it's a line, whether it's a delivery. I mean, there are a lot of times where Paul, listen to this, what do you think? And he's straight up, that's not you. Or yes, you know what I mean? So, and he does a great job. It's almost like he has like, I can't call it a coach because sometimes, you know, there's obviously different coaching methods, but Paul has like this unique sixth sense of knowing when to like deposit a confidence coin in a performer and just give you that one little set of affirmation where you just like, I am the man, you know what I mean? Right. Like where you might not have been right. You're like on the cusp of having that full, let's go out there and crush this thing in front of millions of people. And he can just say one little thing to where you, without question, you believe in what you're doing. So I've said it before. I'm sure I could do it, but I don't think I would want to do this without him in my corner. And he's one of very few, you know. I had two requests. I wanted to work with Michael Hayes. That's my guy. He's been with me from the Shield days and even before that with my family, and a lot of the people around me have been, you know, in relations and in close contact with my family even before my time as a performer back when I was just a kid. So they have a great history with my family and they've taken to me, you know, like family, like blood. And those are two guys who are critical in my process, Michael Hayes and Paul Heyman.
Speaking of family, I think the last time I had you on, it was before the Royal Rumble. I think that's when you came on. And I had mentioned, you know, there were a lot of speculation about you and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, facing each other at WrestleMania. And you made a point to me that I hadn't thought of, which was obviously a very astute point about, you know, there's not going to be fans or it's going to be... They ended up with fans at WrestleMania, but you made the point that this might not be the right time for it because of what's going on with the pandemic and fans, limited fans, whatever. Now, obviously, we're going through this crazy stuff here with the variant, but you would expect next WrestleMania, the fans are back. So can we see you and The Rock finally?
Well, I think we have like a critical ingredient to throw back into the bowl of sports entertainment, right? But I'll leave you with this question, I guess, myself is, do we do it now or do we wait till we're in his backyard of Hollywood? You know, so it's one of those things.
There's another curveball.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It just adds to the narrative. It adds, you know, another dynamic to speculate on. So, you know, I think AT&T Stadium, you know, Dallas, home of the Cowboys, 100,000 plus fans could be in attendance. That's obviously an awesome scenario, but SoFi Stadium, brand new facility out there in LA, that makes quite the argument in its own right.
It's a good nugget. I like that you throw that out there. Obviously, we have a long way to go before any WrestleMania. We've got SummerSlam on Saturday, August 21st, WWE Network in Vegas. Do you get excited by going to Vegas? Do you like Vegas? Do you like to make? Can Roman Reigns even sneak into a casino and go to a blackjack table?
Well, it's been a long time since I've done anything like that. yeah, I mean, you know, I do like casinos. I'm not a gambler, but I like the environment. I like the vibe and the lights and the, you know, it's just a good time. I mean, even if you're not like you know, a table shark or whatever, but like now it's continually getting harder to be able to sneak around and go unnoticed now, which is like it's a blessing, obviously.
Right.
But I don't think I'm like an introvert by any means. I think I know how, you know, I'm social in the right setting, I would say. But I don't mind staying to myself. And that's one thing that, you know, I think remains about me is I'm not looking for any more attention. I don't need any more attention than I'm already getting. You know, that's not what I signed up for this for. I don't really care about fame. I enjoy making money and earning money and the comfort of abundance. I enjoy entertaining people and being able to be creative and craft a storyline and go out there and have the health to be able to storytell physically. But everything that comes along with it within my own, you know, real, you know, pretty much from like Saturday morning until Friday morning, you know, or Thursday night, I would rather just go unnoticed and nobody know who I am.
You have
that switch on Fridays and be, you know, the guy. But
and you have a lot of kids. You have, I don't know if everyone listening knows this, but I've said this to you before. It blows me away that you have two sets of twins. I think that's so cool. So obviously you have your hands full when you're not in the Roman Reigns world. I know as a fan, I actually like that they're doing this on a Saturday instead of a Sunday with the with SummerSlam. As a wrestler, do you even care? It makes no difference to you, I would assume.
No, I mean, I'm you know, as someone who's been in this process for a while, we, you know, typically, and we have been of late, you know, since we've come back to live crowds, is we work on Saturdays pretty much every single week, and I've done it for years. So it doesn't, I mean, from a performance standpoint, it doesn't change anything for me. I think it was just more of a strategical thing, you know, being the location in Vegas and just how travel is, you know, the percentages of, you know, how Vegas is populated with tourists and stuff like that. And when it comes down to it, most people are trying to get out of there Sunday because they're going back to their work week on Monday. So it made great sense, obviously, to do it Saturday when, you know, the numbers of, you know, the Vegas numbers in general are going to be higher.
Right. Now, before we wrap, Lee, come here. I got my niece here. She's a huge Roman Reigns fan. Huge. In fact, she went to a birthday party over the weekend, and she got her friend a Head of the Table t-shirt. So you got my money for your merch. And she wanted to ask a question, and I told her it can only be a good question. She actually came up with a good question. Look, there's Roman.
Hi.
Right, ask the question, because I think this is a good one, and I want to know the answer, too. Go ahead.
You once beat Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania in 2017 against the game Triple H. What happened afterwards backstage after spearing your boss?
So WrestleMania 2017. I mean, after she came up with this, I went and watched it. I mean, you gave Stephanie a legit spear. You go backstage after, it's the boss's daughter. She's the boss. What happens?
She took it like a champ, right? She did a great job. And like you said, I didn't really pull, you know, any of the physicality out. I mean, she took a full on spear, and that's how you should do it in the main event of WrestleMania. But yeah, I mean, she was obviously a little bit sore and not very happy about that. But I think everybody after a main event of a WrestleMania is ecstatic that it, you know, the going through that process and the adrenaline rush of the performance, and then also celebrating a phenomenal moment within, you know, the live audience, everybody watching at home. So it was one of those things that I think she got over really quickly and enjoyed the success of being a part of that main event, you know, with her husband, Triple H. And then also, I think, you know, for her to be a part of that performance with her own father watching on, you know, being Vince McMahon and seeing this whole, you know, spectacle go down and watching him watch her be a part of the you know, the greatest live event in entertainment history. It was a special moment, I think, for everybody. So I'll say she wasn't ecstatic, but I think she was happy with the moment to be a part of that main event.
Good question. All right, let me finish it, Roman. All right, thank you. I actually was.
Thank you.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned earlier, when I talked earlier about the missionary line, you said, what are they going to do? I can't get in trouble. Back then, 2017, were you a little like, did you think, oh, I could get in trouble for this? Or has it, you had the same attitude back then? Or now, now you're really the untouchable.
No, I'm sure there was maybe a little more concern, but it's kind of it's that main event tightrope, right?
Yeah.
Where you have to be able to push the envelope, but you also have to be professional and stay within the confines of what we're trying to do and the audience that we're trying to reach. And then also the example that we have to set. Cause I mean, you know, just a few years ago, your niece was 13, you know, 12 years old, maybe. So you have to think about those things. And I think that's where it's important. And I will say, without I don't want to give him too much credit here, but that's something I think that was special about Cena in his career, is to be able to transition from that ruthless aggression to the PG, you know, turn
right.
that went on through the middle of his career. That's a challenge, you know. It's not easy to go out there and entertain, especially when a lot, you know, there's a good portion of our audience that are, you know, men. Well, let's get my age right for you. You know, middle 30s, right?
I thought we'd go the whole interview without bringing that up. I can't believe it. You got it in there. You got it in there. That's good.
But that's good. It takes some skill, and it takes, you know, some creativity to be able to connect with an audience, but not just smash F-bombs and, you know, reference, you know, turning things sideways and sticking, right. you know, and chugging right. beers. And it's no discredit to those guys who did that before me. That was the barriers and the boundaries of the performance back then. And if that was the case now, I would probably be pushing the envelope just like they did. Yeah. But we have, you know, we're all playing the game as it's, you know, as the rules are set, you know, for each individual.
So is there any chance at all, between now and when you actually have that match with John Cena at SummerSlam on Saturday, August 21st in Las Vegas on the WWE Network, we get another missionary reference?
I don't know about the missionary reference. And you know, let's just throw a little, you know, respect on the missionary. You know, I think we can all agree any position is a good position, right? But over and over and over for 15 years straight, the same thing, it gets stale, it gets tired. You have to be able to show that evolution. You have to be able to, you know, throw the curveball and show those layers of the performer. And that's all I'm trying to push out of John. You know, he's trying, in his mind, and that's like the greatness of these characters, is we all have a justification and we're all rationalizing our viewpoint and our position. But when it comes from me, I'm trying to make a better John Cena, because a better John Cena is just good for our audience. And who better to push him than me and my character? And if I can't get something fresh out of him, then I haven't done my job. So I think
I'm sure it'll be amazing. And I can ask a million follow-up questions to what you just said, but I'll probably never get another WWE person on. So we'll just leave it at that. And we'll tell everyone. This will be the very last question. The first time I ever interviewed you, you told me you were a big Seinfeld fan, which I am. And I told you you got to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm because you said you had not. And then the couple of times I interviewed you since then, you said you never got around to it. Now you're even busier than ever, so I know there's no chance. But I just want to check. Have you gotten into Curb yet at all? No. Okay. I would normally, this is where I would maybe say something nasty, even though you're the WWE Universal Champion, but you have two sets of twins. I can't fault you for not, you know, binging a show that's been on for 10 seasons. So it's okay. But if you ever need a new show, that's the show.
One day. And then once I get into it, I'm going to request the interview with you.
Switch
this whole process.
You can come on anytime. I always appreciate it. And good luck with SummerSlam, Saturday, August 21st, WWE Network, which is now, of course, on Peacock. Do they give you Peacock for free as your WWE champion? I would hope so. I hope they don't make you pay the...
Yeah,
good. Okay.
For sure.
So that's where everyone can get it. WWE Network on Peacock, Saturday, August 21st, SummerSlam, Roman against John Cena. And you can always see Roman every Friday night on Fox on SmackDown. Roman, thanks a lot. I always appreciate talking to you and appreciate you giving me the time.
Yeah, no problem, Jimmy. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, joining me now, the doggy is here.
Hello, Jimmy boy.
Chris Mad Dog Russo.
How are you? Okay,
I'm good.
Buddy. What's happening?
Did you, you know, I texted Eddie, your producer. You know, me and Ian Eagle busted your balls a little bit last week for canceling on me. Did you hear it?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
I thought Eddie was I was going to send it to you.
I did not know that. So I did cancel. I last week was a disaster. So yeah. I did cancel on you last minute. I apologize for that. How would I ever cancel Jimmy Trainor? And so you got Ian to replace and you were busting my chops. Fair enough. I deserve that.
I try not to promote who upcoming guests are on the podcast, because podcasts, to use one of your words, are dicey and people cancel. And you don't want to go on Twitter and say, so I went on Twitter and said you were coming on. And then when you just had some issues and you couldn't come on, I mean, people on Twitter were upset. They wanted to hear you on the SI Media podcast. And Ian was one of those people who was like, what happened to your guest?
Oh, really? Oh, so wasn't Ian was not a replacement?
No, he was a replacement. After you bailed, I texted Ian, and Ian was nice enough to come on, and he imitated you at the beginning, canceling on me, saying the schedule scenario was not working out for you.
Yeah, last week I had a lot going on, so I wasn't able to. I did a bad job with it, but
that's
you
okay.
did a good job of maneuvering with my schedule here at 9 a.m. because I got a big golf thing this weekend, and I got to get my golf game going because I just need to work on my driver, and I have to finish these dopey podcasts that I'm working on, digging up the past. So because of that, I've been scrambling, but here I am now just for you, Mr. Trainer, just for you.
I never tape at 9 a.m. I'm still half asleep.
I know,
so.
You're half asleep. You look good. You look good.
But yeah, I didn't even give you a proper intro because I should mention that you host High Heat Monday through Friday on MLB Network, Sirius XM on the Mad Dog Radio channel every day, 3 to 6, and now the Digging Up podcast, which we have to talk about.
Right.
Unfortunately, you couldn't get the Howard Stern schedule from Sirius and get summer off.
2 months. I mean, there's been a lot, as you know, there was a lot of backlash with that. I don't know. You just don't have them for 2 months. I mean, I don't know enough about it, but that was, Howard will, I mean, he's going to be okay. I mean, I think people will be raring to go once he comes back, but to take 60 days off, when you're a big host and you got a lot of people who rely on you, he's earned it, but I'm a little surprised that was, sort of the agreement. Let's put it that way. I don't know what the scenario was, but I'm a little surprised. I wouldn't want to take 60 days off. And plus in sports, it's a little different because there's so much that might happen in a 60-day period. And what are you going to do? Come back after Labor Day and recap, what happened at Wimbledon? I mean, you can't do it. So as a result of that, sports is a continuous thing. And once we move into the next sport agenda, you lose all the juice from the last one. So that's why for you and I, taking that time off is extra tricky. It really is.
Yeah. Two things on that. 100% right. You can do that if you're Howard. In a sports, if you're doing sports, you can't really do that. You miss too much. Howard will survive. What is he going to talk about? Andrew Cuomo. I mean, he'll get that when he comes back. But I will say this. If you are a diehard Howard listener and fan like I am who've listened, he doesn't do many shows in the summer anyway. I mean, he's off most of the summer. He'd maybe give you 3 weeks out of the summer, maybe four out of this. So, and he's doing three shows a week. So you're really missing like maybe 12 shows. It's not the end of the world with him.
I think it's probably just a continuous aspect of it. Even if it's 12 shows, you can space it out where it doesn't seem like he's gone for that long. But when you're not there for 2 months, I mean, he's Howard. People want, as you said, people pay for him and they want to hear him. And you and I couldn't do it because, I mean, think about what we've missed since July 1st. Let's say it took 2 months off. You obviously missed baseball. You missed all the deadline trading stuff. You missed the Olympics. You missed the Rodgers coming back to training camp. You've missed some golf. You've missed obviously a couple of tennis tournaments. I mean, if you care about that, you've missed a lot of stuff. And so you missed Westbrook to the Lakers. I mean, you missed a lot. And what are you going to do? Come back the day after Labor Day? Well, get to the NFL in a minute. I got to tell you about what I think about Westbrook to L.A. And people don't want to hear that then when a trade that happened on July 15th. That's the tricky thing.
So let me ask you this, because you did you have the Digging Up podcast for Sirius XM where you're doing each episode is about a Major League Baseball team, the best teams that never won a World Series.
Right. They're digging up certain years. We did. We decided to do 10. This is probably back in, maybe April. We decided to do 10. So we picked 10 teams. And that we, sort of as a committee going back, we want to go back to 1910, going back to 1954. The Indians are the poster boys of this because the 54 Indians had the best winning percentage of all time. They were 111-43. Remember, in that year, in that period, they only played 154 games, not 162. They won 111 games. The Yankees won 103, and the Indians beat them by 8 games, and the Yankees had won 5 championships in a row. And then the Indians, a huge favorite in the World Series, huge, got swept by the Giants. And that's the famous Mays catching game one. So we kind of started with that team. You almost have to. Came up with 9 others. And in the process of that, you got to get people on. You know, some teams, it's a little more problematical. How many people are alive from the 54 Indians? Well, the answer is no, nobody. So you got to be a little bit more creative in who to talk about with the Indians. You know, you get the sound, you get play-by-play, you get, you know, some, you know, newsreels from that period, but you got to get some guests. So we've done a very, very good job with, I think we did about 25, 26 interviews. So we've done a very, very good job with the guests. We got Zimmerman, who's put it all together. We've released five of them. I have to do one more narration of another one, but 10 in total. Each one's about 45 minutes.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of work. Yeah, it's a lot
of
work.
It's a lot.
We did two Indian teams, which we didn't want to do, but you have to put the 95 Indians in there. They were 144, and that team got beat by the Braves. So that team, we got Hargrove and Tomey. So you did Tomey and Hargrove. You got good stuff out of those two about how they lost to Atlanta. You know, we did the 65 Twins, not many people alive. We did Tony Oliva and Jim Cott. And I used two people sort of as the background sound of this. Costas was one and Verducci was the other. Verducci was tremendous. He knew all the teams and Bob's Bob. So, you know, we've done a good job with it. And again, I got a great executive producer in Zimmerman. You know, it's a lot of work.
A lot of work.
You know this. You do this. All the other things.
Well, I've heard you take shots at me when you promote your podcast saying I just do like an 18-minute interview and call it a day or something.
I don't think I've said that. This is the second.
Oh, yes, time. You did.
Have I said that? This is the second time right. for you and me. But
Third.
Okay, third. Yeah, I really enjoy. I mean, I it's right up my alley. I know all the baseball. I know a lot of those 70 teams, especially. So I don't need to do a lot of research in a 78 Red Sox. I know that team. So, I mean, I know the pennant race. I know this. I know that. Makes it easy for me. A couple of other teams I got to do a little more work on. But the bottom line is, you know, if you do it properly and get the right people on, it's a historical perspective, and it's perfect right up my alley. Because, you know, I love the old-time baseball anyway.
Well,
and that's why.
This leads me to something I find fascinating about you, and I love it. Nobody loves baseball more than you. Nobody. But on your show, I feel like you resent the NFL's popularity.
A little bit. Yeah, I do.
Because why? It takes away from baseball's popularity?
No, I mean, I think I resent the cottage industry, which is the folks who cover the NFL. I mean, I watched the Get Up this morning on ESPN on a treadmill. And I mean, it's Rodgers this and it's Dak Prescott that because Hard Knocks was last night.
Right.
It's the first preseason game tomorrow. I mean, it's just on and on. It's July. It's August 10th. The season doesn't start for a month. And this has been going on for a long time, too. This is not just beginning today. So I think that aspect of it, resents a little strong. I get put off by. Let's put it that way.
But you know why that happens. It's because that's what people care about.
Well, I mean, I think that's what most of the hosts know about, too. You know, Stephen A. knows the football. Well, he knows the basketball. But, you know, that's what most of these shows know about more so than they know about, say, what's going on in the golf tour or the tennis tour or, you know, what's going on with the A's and the Yankees. So, there is an aspect of it that you almost feel like you're just diving in and you're piling on because there's so much NFL coverage. You know, believe me, once the season starts, I'll be raring to go on the, whatever that day is, the 8th, 9th, Dallas.
Yeah. Well, listen, I remember, you know, if you talk to any old school Mike and the Mad Dog fan like myself, one of our fondest memories of the show is when you and Mike on Mondays would do the ratings from the weekend. So I know you pay attention to the ratings. Right. I mean, they got almost 8 million people to watch a Cowboys-Steeler Hall of Fame game.
I thought it was 6 million. It was 8 million?
No, it was 7.4 or 7.6 or something.
That's pretty damn good.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
That's pretty damn good. And if they didn't beat the Olympics, they were pretty darn close.
They did beat them in, I think they beat them in like the, what do you call it? Like 18 to 34 or 25 to 54.
And the Olympic ratings is, you know, cratered. We know that. But I mean, the NFL is just, it's incredibly powerful. This weekend with the Hall of Fame coverage, the two straight days, I watched a lot of it. I saw Manning. I saw Tagliabue. I saw John Lynch. I saw James. I mean, I watched a lot of that. I saw Joe Buck being introduced there. I was on top of that. I did not see the game.
Right.
Maybe a play or two. I'll watch a little of Zach Wilson against the Giants. I did watch Hard Knocks last night. You know,
that's surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I figured that would give me a little ammunition for today.
Right.
You know,
right.
I can get 10 minutes out of it. Not a lot in there. Did you see it, Jimmy? I'm sure you did.
No, well, here I'll go off on a tangent here. I did not watch Hard Knocks. I have it on the DVR. I'm going to watch it today. I'll tell you what I did watch yesterday, which you need to watch. It came out yesterday on Netflix. So I know you got to maybe get the kids in there to maneuver the Netflix for you.
Yeah.
It's a documentary on the Malice at the Palace.
I heard that. Now, I have seen
it. Was excellent.
I did see the 30 for 30 on it. So I'm going to get more on the Malice in the Palace. I mean, it's worth seeing.
Well, they've got footage. They've got security footage from inside the palace at Auburn Hills that had never been seen before.
Right.
And you get a real sense that the fans in that building were complete animals that night. Now, listen, no one's going to ever defend Ron Artest going in the stands.
Yeah, fans are wrong, too. Fans were wrong, too. 100%.
And I'll tell you, it's interesting because I was going to bring this up, too, and it ties in with this. I'm almost at the point. Now, listen, a lot of this could just be me being old. I have almost zero interest to go to a sporting event anymore. A lot of it's because, you know, it's a pain in the... I'm a Yankee fan. I live on Long Island. You know, Syosset. It's a pain in the neck to get to the Yankee Stadium.
It's a six-hour day.
The offensive prices, $8 for a bottle of water. But I'll tell you, when you see how fans behave at games these days... I mean, Dodgers-Astros last week. I don't know if you saw any of the videos because they were mainly on Twitter. What are we doing at sporting events?
Yeah, I'm with you 100% about going to games. You know, I go to all the World Series games, of course, but I sit in the comfort of a suite, so you can't almost count that. Yeah, I completely agree. Now, I did go to three games 2 weeks ago. I took my 19-year-old to the Phillies, the Orioles, and the Nats. I didn't have any problem with that, but as far as the fan behavior is concerned. But here's what I thought to myself. What am I doing at 61 years of age at Marlins Orioles 2 Wednesdays ago, 90 degrees, 360 pitches, 17 walks, 3 hours and 40 minutes, 8-7 Orioles with two in the bottom of the ninth? I said, geez, what am I? I love Camden Yards, not that much. But I agree. The fan behavior, that's a different argument. The fan behavior is terrible. I don't want to go to football games because you go to a football game, you're sitting there all day at the game. You don't keep up with what's going on around the league. I think that's a little problem for the NFL. It's almost better to be in front of a television set. And, you know, when you gamble and you do fantasy and you watch all the games on DirecTV, that's almost more enjoyable on a Sunday afternoon than going to a Giant or a Jet game and being trapped with traffic and all
100%.
That. So you're better 100%. Off of actually now. You can watch the Giants and Jets, so what do you got to be at the game for? And if the Giant and Jet game gets to be a blowout, you got 9 other games you can watch, which you can't do if you're at the game. So I do think that the in-stadium experience for football specifically is lost a lot of its juice. I think, you know, baseball, it's a little different. You can do other things. It's a summer night. You don't have to watch the other games. You know, it's sort of a, you know, it's an outing. But in football, you know, it's almost a religion to be on top of the whole league. And if you're at a game for your favorite team, now you get the juice to being at the game with the fans, but you don't follow the Bengals game. So I actually think from that standpoint, it's not as good to go to the games. But you're right. The behaviors are nothing. Too much drinking. Oh, there's way too much drinking at these games. You know, they're unruly and it's a pain in the neck, you know, dealing with the crowds, the bathrooms, when you want to go to the men's room, you know, at the quarter or at the half or, you know, at a timeout, end of an inning. I mean, it takes an effort. There's no question about it.
And even if you take out fan behavior, an NFL game is about a billion times better on TV than in person. You need the replays. You need to, you know, you can't see anything at the game. So, but then you throw in, like you said, the drunken, unruly fans. And I feel bad for people, little kids. You take a little kid to a game and you know, you're taking a chance. You don't know what the hell is going to happen.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah. I have my kids are at that age, two of them, that they love they like that juice, you know? So as a result, you know, I make sure that I get them to the stadiums and the arenas and the baseball parks that, you know, that Camden Yards, Lambeau Field, you know, Notre Dame. I get them to those Dodger Stadium. I get them to the places that have an iconic feel to them. But, you know, just to go to a regular ball game or a regular football game, I mean, stay home and watch it. You can do anything you want. You can take a little half hour break if you want, instead of sitting there for 8 hours. I like it much better that way.
I'm curious, doing your show day to day, in and out, you know, I write a column every day for, I don't just do this. I don't know if you, I write every day for SI.com. Right, and I have days where, I don't want to write about the pandemic. We've been through it for a long time. I don't know if that's what people want to hear about, but I feel like there are days where it's almost impossible to avoid in the sports world. You know, people want to use sports as the escape. They don't want to hear about politics, this, that. If you don't think the pandemic is part of the sports world, you're crazy. Do you have to, yourself preparing for a show, doing a show, don't do too much pandemic, get into this, you know, whether it's players not being vaccinated, how, you know, what's going to happen? You know, here in New York, they're saying you got to be vaccinated to go to, I don't know, Madison Square Garden or something like that. And maybe that's coming up. How do you handle and navigate the pandemic and COVID?
I try to stay. First off, the first thing you cannot do as a talk show host, you cannot get into the vaccine, unvaccine thing, because you're going to have.
Well, you did. You did, because I heard that show.
One day, I said, I got to get off this. It's crazy. No, I do think there is, the athletes should take the vaccine because they're hurting their team. You know, Rizzo didn't take the vaccine. He's out for 14 days. I mean, that's. You know, Judge didn't take the vaccine, I don't think. And he's out, you know, he was very hesitant, but he didn't really give you an answer. When they don't give you an answer, that means that they weren't vaccinated. And from that standpoint, I think they're actually hurting their ball club because they don't play and they need them. So I think that is, in a lot of ways, it's, you know, it's not the right thing to do to your team. Team is relying on you. So I think from a sports perspective, you can talk about how not having a specific player hurts your team. Like Rizzo, now avoids play pretty well, but you get the idea. I haven't gotten that wrapped up in it. I did for a long time. Doctors, you know, when we can have full stadiums. I haven't gotten into the mask debate because that's the thing. You know, again, it's polarizing. You're going to have
The mask thing doesn't really tie into sports as much as the vaccine. You know, because my issue is this. It's one thing if you don't want to take the vaccine, but some of the things that athletes have said about not taking the vaccine is what ends up because, you know, Cole Beasley, the NFL is holding information from us. The NFL has no information that anyone else, the information is from doctors in the CDC. Roger Goodell does not have information on Pfizer.
Correct.
So you're stupid. And then the guy on the Washington football team. Well, I need to research and do more. What are you doing? What research? Are you in a lab?
He's got a coach who's a kid. Survivor. I mean, you would think, for instance, how about Kirk Cousins this week? You
know, I'm going to put myself in plexiglass.
I mean, he's the quarterback of the team. He needs camaraderie. He needs the guys to like him and, you know, to be the leader. And he's going to follow health protocols and basically be by himself for a long period of time. To me, it's just, I think that's a sports question, though.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying.
So that's how I will approach it. From that standpoint. But if you get into a polarizing debate about vaccine, non-vaccine, pandemic, non-pandemic, mask, not mask, I think that is when you lose it as a host, because I got folks in the right and folks in the left who both listen. And if I take a position on something that is polarizing, I'm going to have the other side be annoyed at me. I would prefer not to be in that situation. So I try to stay away from it as I can.
You'll get nonstop calls, though, that's for sure.
Oh, you sure will. Oh, you will get, I mean, it is a very, very emotional topic, and you will get a lot of people to chat on it.
How about
you can get 9 lines for about days if you wish.
How about Lamar Jackson? I had COVID twice, won't get the vaccine. Yeah, I need more information. What information do you need?
Take the shot. I mean, my gosh almighty. You know, it'd be very, very interesting. Now, the NFL will never want to forfeit a game because it's going to cost them money, because they have not lived up to their contracts with the networks if they don't get every game in. But it would be fascinating to see if a player or players cost a team a forfeit. Now, I guess
it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
They didn't forfeit a game last year. I think they would figure out the schedule. I would love to see it, though. I would love to see it.
Last year, they moved games around. They're not moving games around this year. Remember when the Steelers, was it the Steelers in Washington, played on a Tuesday or Wednesday? They're not doing that this year.
I think they would, though, Jimmy. I think, you know, if they don't, they're going to have to pay back the networks a rebate, because the network is contracted to do a certain amount of games. And if they lose a particular game. So I think they would do everything they could to get in. I think it's a threat more than it is actually anything real. But I agree. The Beasleys, the Cousins, the Lamar Jacksons, the Sweets. I find it very odd that they are going to be this, you know, stubborn about taking a shot. Take the, you're a football player. It's part of the public good. Take a shot. Jeez. I mean, my goodness gracious. And there are folks. And Rizzo's another one. I mean, Rizzo, you know, he didn't take the shot.
Right.
Take the shots. I mean, my gosh, you got nothing. You're not going to die. Not going to die. Go ahead.
Your station gets a lot of buzz from Pat McAfee.
Right.
Do you have any kind of relationship with it? I know you make the comments that Mad Dog Radio is now Pat McAfee Radio.
Yeah, I like that.
But, you know, from a radio media standpoint, I mean, you have to have enormous respect for how Pat has made this career for himself.
He's got 1.3 million followers on Twitter. And I mean, he got Aaron Rodgers on every week. I mean, whether it was he or AJ Hawk, one of them did. And he's on. And, you know, I couldn't do that. So, yeah, I mean, the style of the show may not be my cup of tea. The language or something along those lines may not be my cup of tea. But the power of the show is different. Power and style are different. Now, it's a YouTube show that's on radio. It's a YouTube show that's on radio. So it's a little different than how you and I would approach, you know, doing. And I'm a radio show. And if they simulcast it, okay, like on Yes, let them simulcast it. It's going to be still a radio show. Pat's gone the other way. It's a TV show in which they made it for a radio show. You know, one is one. It's one and the same. And again, the power is the most important thing. He's got viewers / listeners. And because of that, he can get guests. That's all you need. That's all you need.
Does the language really bother you?
Well, I mean, I think it bothers my friends, you know.
Really?
And I hear from them all the time.
Really?
Yeah, Jim Krauser down in Naples, Florida. Of course.
Cursing? That's it. I mean, really? We're going to get worked up over cursing?
I mean, is it necessary, though?
Sometimes.
Is it
sometimes
necessary?
A curse can get your point across.
Once in a while. I mean, but again, that's just, I mean, that's a matter of taste.
Right.
The younger audience doesn't care. The older audience does.
Right. Do you know, is Rodgers going to do his show again this year?
That's a good question. I haven't heard he isn't. He hasn't been on yet, right? He hasn't been on yet.
I don't think he's been on since the whole, you know, since he was not going to play.
I thought he might do it when he did his media. And one thing about Rodgers, well, you know, you love him or hate him, or he's, you know, he's this, he's stubborn, he's that. He's good on the air. He's thoughtful. He gives you good answers. He doesn't beat around the bush. You know, he goes in there, you know, he tries. You know, that I give him a lot of credit for. So when he does go on radio or does spots or deals with his Packer media for the 30 minutes or so, he's compelling. And radio is all about. You want to be compelling. Rodgers, when he goes on there, is very compelling. That's very, very important. So
if you paid
close important, I have not heard exactly.
If you paid close attention to his interviews with McAfee last year, week in, week out, it came out when Schefter dropped that report that he was unhappy in Green Bay, it wasn't a complete shock. He never looked. I mean, he looked pretty miserable during those interviews. Not doing the interview with Pat, but he didn't look like he was enjoying his life or the season or football during those interviews.
Furthermore, I mean, his last press conference after they lost to Tampa, he said, "Who knows what the future brings?"
And right, like
that.
Right.
I mean, that was a pure sign that something was going on too. Listen, he didn't get what he. I hated that whole scenario. That to me was a waste of time. He was being very diva-like. Bottom line, he did show up at camp first day. He handled the media excellently that first day when he came back. So I give him credit for that. It seems like they've straightened it out. To me, it turns out to be a lot to do about nothing because he's playing there. He's 37, 38 years of age. He'll play the whole season. We'll readdress this in January, February, and go from there. And the truth be told about Rodgers, and he's great. We all know that. He has not played very well in some of these championship games. He did not play great in Atlanta. He did not play great in Seattle, albeit an onside kick lost in the game. He didn't play great in the game. He was outplayed by Wilson in the fourth quarter in overtime. He didn't play well, bad body language against San Francisco. Now, they were going to lose anyway, but it wasn't like he did anything to win the game. And he, although he was decent, pretty good, he was far from immortal-like against Tampa. So you have to, you know, he ran in, you know, he didn't throw the ball the last play. He, you know, he didn't throw the ball in the end zone. He tried to run it in, that kind of. So you got to keep that in mind. He has not been as great as you'd like, Mahomes-like, in the big spot in the, some of these championship games. So he's got to take a little – he's got to take a little responsibility for that, despite his greatness. So we shall see here how this year develops. Because one of these days, how about going 30 for 42 in a championship game, 345, four touchdowns, good body language, win going away. Now, he's got that in him. He's had games like that in the playoffs. But in some of these championship games, Jimmy, he has not played great.
You got to be. And he's I feel like there is going to be an enormous amount of pressure on. Like, he can't have bad games now this season after he caused all that hullabaloo. Like,
and you, plus the fact he's on TV. He's on like five primetime games.
Yeah, yeah.
Including Christmas against the Browns. I mean, he's on Kansas City. I mean, you're going to see him plenty of times. Aaron Rodgers will be on TV. He'll play well. We all know he's going to play well. It's what Rodgers is going to do when there's a Super Bowl on the line, which will be interesting.
Right. Let's talk about you for a minute. You're nominated finally for the Radio Hall of Fame.
Right.
Is that a big deal? Do you care?
Well, anybody would care. I mean, if you say I don't care, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, but at this point, it's insulting.
Maybe you say that when you don't get in, but before you don't say that.
But it's insulting they waited this long to nominate you, in my opinion.
You know, I mean, I think right now I'm not looking at it from that standpoint. And remember, I got nominated on this time specifically for Sirius.
Right.
This is not a Mike and a Mad Dog nomination. This is 10 years syndicated radio nomination. It's a little different from, this is not like a Lifetime Achievement Award. Right. So right. It's a little different. I'm thinking about it. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, it's, vote is forthcoming. I'm not going to lie to you. I'll probably downplay it if I don't win or don't get in. Right now, I mean, I'm certainly going to give it some thought. And sure, you like to get in. And, once you get in, what are you going to say? You know what? Thanks for asking. I should have been in 30 years ago. You can't say that. So I'll keep my mouth shut, thank the authorities, and have fun.
Will you go to the ceremony?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, okay. Yes, of course I will. I think it's in October. I'd have to maneuver with the baseball, but I definitely would. And it's not in New York. I think it's in Chicago.
Yeah, it is, because Howard rants about it all the time.
Oh, he does. Yeah, so I'd have to figure out a way to, get my mother out there. The answer is yes, I definitely would. I got to figure out I would definitely go if so honored. How's that sound?
Right. Go ahead. So 13 years at Sirius, 19 at The Fan. If my math is correct, that's 32 years doing radio.
And then a couple years at MCA before that, too.
Right. And obviously, you've been doing MLB Network for a long time now, too, every day.
Eighth year.
Is there any thoughts to slowing down?
62 years old in October. Definitely not the radio. I do love the talk show every day. I mean, listen, I don't love necessarily being at home. When I have to get back into the commuting, and I'm sure there'll be an element of that down the road here after Labor Day, that will be an adjustment, from where I live, 55 miles away via train back to the, 49th Street and 6th Avenue. So I'm going to have to, that's 17 hours a week of commuting if you do it every day. So I'll have to come up with some sort of hybrid situation there. I love the radio. So I think that the radio I will do. Do I cut back on a couple of other things? It's possible. It's possible. But, I've learned a few lessons. When you retire or when you cut it back, you're not getting it back again. Once you say goodbye, that's it. And, it's not like I'm 80. You can't play golf every day, and I still live in cold weather because I got a kid who's a sophomore in high school. So from that standpoint, okay, fine. You don't do this, you don't do that. And you take breaks, you get more vacation. What am I going to do in the middle of February when I got to, and it's 15 inches of snow outside and it's 12 degrees and I have a child who's in high school? What am I going to do? Sit around and watch old America game tapes from the 66, 67 Lombardi Packers?
You would be happy doing that.
And I do love that. So, but you do have to think about the alternative. Once you retire, or cut back, you know, there's going to be more time to fill in your day. And it's not like I live in, you know, Arizona, California, or Florida, where I got warm weather and I can fill my day up by playing doubles all night in tennis. I do have a kid who's in high school in Connecticut, and he's got two more years to go.
It does seem like to me, from the outside looking in, the radio greats, you know, Howard is a classic example of this. They'll bitch and moan and complain, but they never leave the radio. They never leave the radio.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. That's why I'm surprised Mike left.
Yeah. And Mike has stayed quiet since leaving.
Yeah. Give him credit. He hasn't said a word. I'm a little surprised that, that Mike left because of the fact that, you know, I think your theme is right. Most of your radio guys sort of, they hang around, you know, I mean, A, they get paid so much money. Why not? B, it's not that, you know, you're on 3 hours a day. It's not, or 4 hours a day. It's not like you're on, it's like an 8 hour work day per se. And they love doing it. So, and I'm probably, you know, I'm sort of along the same lines. That's why I basically tell you that I don't think I'd ever actually overall give it up. You know, I'm doing three jobs right now. If you want to count the podcast as a job, mm-hmm. and when I do them, it is. So, you know, maybe down the road I'll cut back a little bit. But again, I still got a kid in junior. I still got a kid in high school, Jimmy, who's doesn't go to boarding school, and he goes to school every day. And you know, I mean, I'm in Connecticut, cold weather, and I still want to talk about what's going on. So I don't see it right at the moment.
And that's the, I think that also ties into the beauty of sports. There's always something to talk about.
Exactly.
I listened to your show yesterday where, you know, you spent 3 hours on Joe Buck and classic baseball calls.
Yeah, I know.
And you had a show out of nowhere just on that, which I thought was, and I've written this a million times. People who don't like Joe Buck, they're lost. They're completely lost.
I mean, I got a couple of the listeners who don't, I don't get it. I mean, you want to get on Joe's schedule where he kind of at times doesn't do as much baseball as you'd like, you know?
Well, that's your deal. Most people, you know, Fox. That's not his decision. That's Fox.
Well, last year, for instance, he didn't do game 7 and he did the Green Bay Tampa game. You know, remember that postseason series?
Fox is always going to put him on the NFL. Yeah.
Joe Buck, though, could say, listen, I should do the baseball. Joe Buck's big enough that he could do the baseball.
You know how much they pay for that football package?
Yeah, I mean, I forget what game 7 he missed. Let's see. It would have been Braves-Dodgers. That's right. Braves-Dodgers. Because they did.
The baseball fan in you. There's what I talked about earlier. Chris Russo baseball fan is pissed off that Joe Buck does the NFL. You want him on baseball.
But doesn't that make baseball look bad? That game 7 of an NLCS, their lead play-by-play guy is doing
Here's what I'll say. I don't think it makes baseball look bad. I think it makes you understand the reality. The country is ruled by the NFL. To use your phrase, I will use your phrase. MLB is not a patch on the NFL's fanny. It's just not. And any sport, right. NBA and you know, the NHL playoffs this year had lower ratings than college softball on ESPN.
Is that true? Well, they weren't on ESPN. And next year, they'll do better on ESPN.
They will do better. But you can't compare the NFL to the other sports. You just can't.
I get all that. I just thought in that scenario, especially with Jack Buck and his history of the Cardinals, I thought Joe should have done the baseball. But again, and I hate it when they're on FS1 instead of Fox. We discussed
I know that. That's a big thing for you, too. Yeah.
But, I mean, baseball gets mad at me for bringing this stuff up. They should be happy that they have somebody on who is annoyed. You know, Costas gets annoyed. Who's annoyed by this, whether I'm 80 years old or not, the fact that it bothers me should be a good sign. Well, you know, he cares enough that it bothers him. That should make them happy. They should have more people like me being upset.
I mean, listen, I hate to say it. I don't mean to insult you, but I'm in this category too. A lot of it is just they're going to look at you as just an old man who, you know, like all you have to do is hit the guide button on the remote and you could find FS1. It's not like you got to figure out how to do brain surgery. You just got to find a channel.
Well, then why don't they put the college football game on FS1 and put the baseball game on Fox?
Because college football gets triple the ratings of MLB.
Not necessarily that. Not a postseason game. You know, Washington and Oregon on FS1 does not do better than
I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. That one, I'll give you.
And they put the college football. That bothers me. Drives me nuts. But anyway, that's not here nor there.
Last... You know,
Buck is good, though. Buck is very good. He's great. He's a great announcer.
I feel like I've written this many times. We're in a good time here. If you're a football fan, you have Buck, Nance, Michaels, Ian, Burkhart. It's a really good time, you know, I think, for NFL announcers.
Ian is, you know, he's not he's underrated great. Because people know. Ian is very, very good.
He's excellent.
Very versatile. He's an excellent announcer. You know, he's got Nance ahead of him, and he got Michaels doing the games. And Michaels, if he doesn't do the games next year on NBC, he's just going to go to Amazon and do the games on Amazon. So they get the games to Tirico.
All right, but you're a perfect person. I've said this on this podcast before. I think maybe I asked Martian. I don't know who I asked. If you're Al Michaels, and you've had one of the great careers in the history of broadcasting, I mean, probably top three, top five.
As a play-by-play guy, no question.
You want to end your career on Amazon?
Off doing a Super Bowl.
Doing Thursday night football? Really? At that point, Al, just, you know, go play tennis.
But it's the same thing you said a little while ago about the radio greats you want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do a radio show when you've made billions and billions of dollars? So as a result of that, he's going to do it. I mean, I would, you know, Al, I think a lot of coaches and everything are afraid once they quit, they're going to die. You know, Bear Bryant, that kind of thing. I did a lot on Bobby Bowden this week. I took, you know, I wanted to do something on Bowden. And that was a little dicey because not a lot of people, he's 91 and he's been out of the limelight for a long time.
Right.
But I figured I'd do a lot on Bowden. So, I mean, I still get accused of doing old man radio, but I don't care. I'm going to do whatever.
But it's great. Yeah. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter if it's old man, young man. It has to be authentic. You're authentic. That's what the bottom line is. Yes. Now I'm going to, one last one, then I'll let you go. I'll tell everyone again, Dog is hosting the Digging Up the Past podcast for SiriusXM. Looks at the best MLB teams that did not win a World Series. And obviously he's on SiriusXM every day, 3 to 6 Eastern, MLB Network, high heat. Last one. I don't know if you became aware of this at all, because I know you're not a Twitter guy. But a couple, maybe I would say 2 months ago in that area, I posted an old clip of you and Mike doing a show at a golf course where you told a story about burning one of your children in the bathtub.
My wife hates it when this comes up, but go ahead.
Oh, does she? Let me tell you, the reaction I got to that clip, I can't even begin to tell you. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that person who I did put in a hot tub accidentally is the one who set up this podcast for me today, and he's the Colin. He's the big sports fan.
Yeah,
that was people like that. You know, that is a bad one on my part because that's pretty negligent.
Okay, well let me tell you,
they like the human frailty of it. The fans like that.
Let me tell you what people love the most about it from the reaction I got. You tell the story about scalding your young child in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And you don't really, there wasn't like an, you know, I can't believe I did that. I was so sorry. That was, Then you talk about how, because that happened, you ended up missing the golf.
Yeah, it was a Westchester Classic. And it wasn't a big event.
And Mike said, why didn't you put on the golf channel? And you said, I didn't even think that was a terrible job by me. You didn't say terrible job about burning your kid in the bathtub. You said terrible job that you couldn't find the golf. And that's the part of the clip that people kept commenting
about. Into that. And my wife would hate that. Ginny Russo wouldn't be too pleased. But that is funny that I was more wrapped up on the golf. And that was in probably 2005 somewhere in that period. Yeah, the Mike and the Mad Dog stuff, people love it. You know, I mean, you plug something in and people really get a huge kick out of it with Mike and me. I can cure cancer, but the Mike and the Mad Dog 19-year, I did JJ's podcast a couple of days ago. He was another one, you know, the ringer, and he just saying, you know, he loved the Mike and the Mad Dog thing. The Mike and the Mad Dog thing is very, very important to a lot of people. There's no question.
But that story, even for people who weren't Mike and the, that story, people enjoyed that story.
I'm happy to hear that. Now, how are you doing? You've been good?
Yeah, I can't complain. You know, it's I could do without a variant coming in and shutting everything down again. I mean, we had a month there where things were nice. And, you know, I had two close friends in the past month who were vaccinated and got COVID. It shakes you up a little bit.
You're not going to die, though, if you get vaccinated.
No, you're not going to die.
You're not going to be hospitalized.
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about if I get it without knowing it and I give it to my 78-year-old dad.
Has he been vaccinated?
Yes, he's vaccinated. But, you know, when you're older and you have health issues, who knows what can happen?
You never know.
That's my only, I'm not worried about me. So, you know, but yeah.
I'm right. I think we're going through a period right now. I would think, you know, maybe by the end of September, you'll see things sort of bounce back a little bit. You're right, this variant's causing trouble. But I do think, I'm not a doctor. Right. I'm not Fauci, but I do think that you'll see sort of a, you know, we hit a bad moment and we're hitting it now. And then I think you'll see it recover a little bit. I think we'll be a little better off.
And in terms of work, I know you don't want to hear this, but right now, and it's August 11th, I have one thing on my mind. Get to the NFL season.
I understand that. And I'm thinking about it too. Or college, yeah.
I think it's going to be a good NFL season,
I think so, too. Fans back in the stands will make a big difference. You know, I think it will be very, very good. You know, Rodgers returning, huge. Brady back in Tampa, huge.
Right.
A lot of young quarterbacks. The Jets. Mac Jones, if Cam's in, very good. You know, Justin Fields in Chicago. So, I mean, I think that, you know, Dak Prescott's going to be healthy. I think you got that with Dallas. I think that would be – I'm interested to see where Deshaun Watson ends up. I think that would be interesting. He's not going to play for Houston.
It doesn't seem that way, that's for sure.
And, you know, we'll see what they do with this whole thing with the commissioner's list. So that will be something we'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you've had issues with him. I've talked about this a million times. The Brady personality and coming out of his shell since becoming a Tampa Bay Buck has been, I think, fascinating to watch.
Well, his interview with Stern was mind-boggling.
Tremendous.
Good.
Right.
He did a tremendous job on that.
Ian told a great story on the pod last week about a couple of years ago. Ian gets to Patriot facility early, 9 a.m., to, you know, before a game or whatever, to do interview with Tom. And Ian had a long flight, called the game the night before. So Ian doesn't drink coffee. He needs a little jolt. So he drinks a Pepsi and he's eating a donut. And Tom walks in and basically says, what are you doing? Is that working out for you? And then he sees Ian 3 months later. And Ian said, Tom goes, where's your Pepsi and donut?
Well, very good. I like that.
I'll send you the clip of that story.
That's very good. And again, he you heard him with Stern. He was
tremendous. Yeah. All right, dog. I appreciate it.
Keep in
Digging
touch.
Up the Past podcast, SiriusXM, and the SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio every day, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday. Enjoy the rest of the summer.
You too, Jimmy. Thank you, pal.
All right. Podcast just keeps rolling along. Two interviews weren't enough. We need Train of Thoughts, our weekly segment with Sal Licata, who joins me every week from SNY TV in New York, WFAN Radio, and he's on Twitter at Sal_Licata, where we will just opine on a few things here. Sal, how are you, buddy?
Good. I'm looking forward to busy week. Last week, remember, you said not much to talk about or we're struggling for topics. This week, there's a lot going on.
I could start with you bailing on my barbecue.
Well, it wasn't me bailing on the barbecue. We had plans.
Questionable.
Then they were canceled.
Questionable.
Yeah. I know. Blame my wife. When in doubt, blame the wife.
Always. All right, let's get into a couple of things. It just came out on Tuesday. I watched it on Netflix, Untold Malice at the Palace. You watched it?
I did. I just watched it now. Yeah.
Now, I thought it was very, very good. I said on Twitter, I highly recommend it. I thought it was maybe a little over the top with the drama. I'm not sure I need, like, you know, a whole thing about Reggie Miller being the greatest thing ever and never getting a title. Keep it to the past. But I thought it was very well done. And I liked it a lot. Let me start with that. What were your thoughts on that?
I enjoyed it. I think I learned a little bit about it. A couple of things that jump out. First of all, I would still be enraged by the moron that threw the cup to start the whole thing. I mean, and then you see fans pouring soda and popcorn at players. Like, who the hell do you think you are that you could get away with that stuff? And I did feel bad for Jermaine O'Neal because I mean, you always associate him with that incident. It's as simple as that. And he did kind of get a bad rap. Also,
that's interesting because I don't associate him. I associate Ron Artest with it.
Right. But O'Neal was there too. And one of the main culprits. And Artest, you know, look, that's the biggest thing I took away. Artest had major mental problems.
Yeah.
And at that time, that was not something that really got addressed or the proper treatment. Now, maybe they had, like you said, team psychiatrists or whatever, but the dude was struggling, asking for time off. He talked about anxiety. clearly now he seems much more in touch with what was going on, but he had, we should have known looking back at it, he had major, major issues and he was trying to be peaceful at that. He stepped away. He was in therapy. He goes to lay down on the scorer's table, which I know is a little nutty, but at least he's trying to think, okay, let me take a deep breath. And then some idiot hits him with a couple of things and incites a literal riot, which is just insane. But yeah, obviously he needed help, mental help, Artest.
I came out of it feeling really good about the fact that Ron Artest got the help he needed and seems like he's in a much better place. I thought that was inspirational. I thought it was interesting that, you know, he said even back then when that brawl took place, he was seeing a therapist because he talked about the 5 second rule or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes a long time. It takes a lot of work. You know, who knows? Maybe he doesn't come out of it so mentally healthy if that incident didn't take place. Obviously, you know, that may have, you know, just hearing him talk about how he feels bad that he left the Pacers and he was a coward and then going to the Lakers. Yeah. I thought that was inspirational. I wanted to vomit seeing what the fans were doing. And not just the guy throwing the beer. Well, yeah, the one guy who ran on the court, who just decided to walk on the court as if he's going to take on the players. But also, the fans who were interviewed today still seemed completely out of their minds. I mean, one guy showing up with a wig and makeup
as a
grown adult. And then the guy who threw the beer, like, thinking like he had every right to do that. It was unbelievable.
The way, now that was current with the guy who threw the beer. I thought that was old stuff.
Well, it was after the incident took place. Like,
right,
him,
and he was on some interview show. Right, I wanted to, I thought that was even almost worse, where he was joking around saying, my only regret is not tripping him. That makes my blood boil. I mean, that made me nuts watching How
about
the guy you said that came on the court? How about him? Not only in the current interview where he's like, oh, they really mistreated a loyal fan. Dude, what? And then at the time when they go back and show him being interviewed where he's like, oh, I got punched in my mouth. I have to go check my face out now. You got a little fat lip. Like, give me a break. So clearly there were issues there. And that guy doesn't even know that how wrong he was running on the court and deserved to get decked by Artest or Jermaine O'Neal.
And how do you have an NBA game with no security in the building?
3 police on site for 20,000 people in a building? When you have that large a crowd, I don't care if it's a concert, an NBA game, how do you excuse having no security or no police on premise? That doesn't make any sense.
And then they had to call 911 because they didn't have enough police and security in the building.
Please get to the palace now. There's a riot breaking out. Just in absolute insanity. Hard to imagine. And, like I said, I remember watching the highlights the next morning just in shock. But looking back and seeing the different footage, it was just, I mean, unfortunate. What an unfortunate incident.
And then for me, probably the biggest thing to come out of it, and this is a huge spoiler, so if you want to watch it, stop listening now, or you should have stopped minutes ago. But
spoiler alert.
The whole thing started because Jamal Tinsley told Artest to go foul the guy in the blowout.
Go get your foul now, or whatever it was.
That's what started the whole thing.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. That's the guy who deserves the blame more than anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even recall that Jamal Tinsley was in the league or on the scene, right? I mean, you can know about Ben Wallace and Artest and Jermaine O'Neal and Steven Jackson, but Jamal Tinsley, who's thinking of him? Now, again, it didn't get to that level even after the little scrum on the court that led to the fan throwing something and then all hell broke loose. But yeah, you're right. Go get that foul now. Insane.
And the best line from Steven Jackson when they start getting into the brawl before it got into the stands, and he was like, we're all friends. He goes, here's the truth. NBA players, we don't want to fight. No one wants to fight. He goes, you have to say some real disrespectful shit for us to start fighting. Oh, that was a great line.
It was honestly. And even I think Ben Wallace said the same thing. Like, nobody really wants to fight in these things.
Reggie Miller came right out and he said, all our fights are fake.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's what it was. I thought it was Ben Wallace, but maybe it was Miller. Right. Exactly. They're all fake anyway. And then Jackson backed it up saying, nobody really wants to fight.
I thought that was great.
And by the way, Jackson is a really good dude. I've worked with Jackson over the years at some other stuff I was doing. I even forget what the name of the show was, but he's just a good dude. And you can see there, he was just basically saying, look, I was protecting my teammates. Artest got into the scrum. He went into the crowd. You think I'm going to stand by you? I would do the same thing. If you or I were in this scrum and somebody started throwing something at you, I mean, I'd jump in there too. Forget about, you know, you're not thinking about the ramifications of it. Forget about the fallout. You're protecting your friends. So give Steven Jackson credit. And he got a bad rap for it. And they lost a ton of money, as they said.
Actually, I should correct myself. The funniest line is probably when Artest afterwards says, are we going to get in trouble for this?
But you know what? We laugh, and it is funny. It shows you his mental state at the time. He just wanted it to go away. Like, oh, crap. Right. I don't want to deal with this. Just please let it go away. I don't want any more trouble. Are we going to get in trouble? Yeah, you think? We're screwed. Yeah.
I know. All right, let's do train of thoughts topic number two. Mm-hmm. You're a diehard Mets fan. So obviously you're coming at this a little bit different. But are you intrigued by, excited, interested in the Yankees-White Sox Field of Dreams game in Iowa on Thursday night?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, look, I mean, you know I'm a Mets fan. I grew up a Mets fan. But doing New York sports talk, I have to represent the Yankees as well. So from that aspect, I've been into the Yankees all year long. Yes, I'm into it. I think it's cool. Now, the people on
that movie
media,
was terrible, just for the record. But
oh, no, I think you're wrong. And now I wouldn't put it up there with the best baseball movies, but I enjoyed it. Well, you can't say it was terrible.
So the cheese factor, the hokey bullshit.
It's all cheesy and hokey. Well, give me your baseball movie. Did you for the love of the
Major
game?
League. Major League.
Well, I mean, that can't be beat. Major League is great. I'm saying
you can't tell me what my favorite baseball movie is. My favorite baseball movie is Major League.
It's great. As I'm saying, that one can't be beat. Field of Dreams, it's fine. I wouldn't say it's the best thing ever. I'm looking forward to the game. I'm looking forward to the uniforms. I'm not looking forward to watching Andrew Heaney pitch for the Yankees. But the people on Twitter going nuts, like, oh, is this heaven and the cornfield? Like, dude, we get it. It's Iowa. It's a cornfield. Yeah. It's going to be a great scene. I think the people who are covering it are overdoing it by a smidge.
I give baseball credit for doing something a little different here. You know, it's a regular season game, so you might as well spice it up a little. I can't say this is going to be the bottom line for me. And again, I'm a Yankee fan, so I come at it differently. The Yankees lose, you could take Field of Dreams and shove it up your you-know-what. If the Yankees win, it's a great game and we're having fun. It's that simple. All right. It's not really, you know.
I think it's a good idea, though, and it is a good idea to grow the game or help, like you said, bring interest to an otherwise – look, if it were a Thursday night game against the White Sox, you and I aren't talking about it because it's being done in the Field of Dreams. It's a big deal.
I like that they did it on. I think it's going to be. It was smart of Fox to do it on a Thursday. You're not doing it on like a Saturday when they usually do their game of the week when no one's watching on a summer Saturday when people are at the beach or barbecuing and doing, you know, family stuff. I think it was smart to put it on a Thursday. I think it'll do well because of that. People are going to check it out. So, you know. Hopefully it goes
you
well.
You think it'll beat the preseason football? Aren't there two preseason football games?
I don't know if there's a national one, though. I think they're probably local. I don't know. Listen, I will confess to not knowing the preseason schedule. But,
oh, no, that's fine. I just happened to notice that.
I don't know. If they're national games, then the football will probably beat it.
Good point. Yeah, I didn't think about that. You're probably right. Maybe one's on the NFL Network, but that probably won't beat baseball.
Then that won't beat it. Yeah. All right, Trainer thoughts topic number three. A Packers reporter showed up to practice earlier this week wearing Crocs with socks, and Aaron Rodgers lit him up.
Good. It's lit him up. First of all, do you own Crocs?
Absolutely not.
Me neither. I mean, and they've been a thing for years. They are hideous to look at, and I'm not opposed to somebody trying something different or whatever. If that's your style, fine. But A, I think they're disgusting looking, and B, you're a reporter. You should not be showing up in Crocs, period, and then socks on top of it. Nothing says I am lazy and don't give a crap about wearing socks with Crocs or flip-flops. Simple as that.
All right. So I wanted to bring this up to you you have the complete opposite take that I expected. Because knowing you for so many years, I know you're big on be yourself, be your own individual, be a follower, be a leader, not a follower.
Right.
So I thought your take would be the guy's allowed to wear, if he's comfortable, he can wear whatever he wants. So your take is surprising to me.
The athlete can. The reporter covering the team.
You're saying it's not professional.
Well, yes. On top of it, I think Crocs are hideous, but whatever, to each his own. There are times I will wear, and even myself who don't really care what I look like, and my wife will say, you dress like a Christmas tree today. What's wrong with you? I'll wear socks with flip-flops out of sheer laziness. Like, I don't feel like bending down and taking my socks off.
But see, that's just as much as a disgrace as the reporter.
Agreed. However, it's laziness maybe to go get the mail or go out to the store to get something.
Well, that
real
doesn't
quick.
Count.
I'm not going to a place where there are other people. This is work. How are you wearing Crocs with socks to work? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, what if you wore the Crocs with no socks? Would that be okay?
I still think, borderline at best. Are you allowed to wear flip-flops around? I mean, I don't know. I guess that would be acceptable, even though I'm just not a Crocs fan at all.
I will say, I think, listen, I'd rather be, you know, dead than wear Crocs, okay? It's not happening on my watch. But I do think if the guy wants to wear, they're different than flip-flops. Flip-flops, your foot is exposed. If he's wearing the Croc, his foot's covered up.
All right.
He needs to do it without a sock, and I think it's...
That's fair. You know,
it's a little less... I don't think Aaron Rodgers would have lit him up if he didn't wear the socks.
And did you see his excuse for wearing the socks? I don't want my feet to sweat? What? That makes no sense.
And maybe there's socks that prevent sweat. I don't know. Because I would think the socks would make your feet sweat.
You wear flip-flops, right?
Yes.
You ever wear socks with flip-flops?
Never, ever, ever. Right. Yeah, what am I? I'm a human being. I'm not an animal. All right. Those are our three train of thoughts topics for the week. And this has been a long pod with Chris Russo, Roman Reigns, and Sal. So we're going to wrap it up with just those three. Check out. So would you, in closing, I would recommend Untold Malice at the Palace. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, you have to watch it. If you know anything, even if you don't, I was even trying to get my wife into a little bit, and I think she was intrigued. It's a must watch.
All right. All right. Take it easy, Sal. Thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye. All right, that wraps it up. My many, many, many thanks to Roman Reigns from the WWE and Chris Mad Dog Russo from SiriusXM and Sal Acata for our weekly Train of Thought segment. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. If you did, drop a review on Apple. That helps a lot. And if you are not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button and become one for the SI Media Podcast. And like I said at the top, Ian Eagle from CBS Sports, Turner Sports, was on last week. He was tremendous. Great conversation with Ian. 2 weeks ago, Brian Curtis of The Ringer. If you missed those, check those out in the archives. All right, that wraps it up for this week. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Stay safe and take care.